Good afternoon, everybody. My name is Dean. I'm a scientist working at USGS, actually, but I'm stationed at the Beltsville Agricultural Research Center, where I've worked for 4 years with my colleagues Greg McCarty and Ali Sadeghi here in the audience, and Megan Land and Jason Kepler, our partner at the Maryland Department of Agriculture. Let's see, just hit the keys here. Our work's been done in over 4 years in the context of the National Conservation Effects Assessment Project. And for those of you not familiar with it, 2002 Farm Bill started up a primarily Agricultural Research Service and NRCS partnership in terms of evaluating the effects of conservation practices in the landscape, realizing that climate and hydrography, factors like that, have a significant effect on conservation, so you need to focus on some long-term watershed studies in terms of getting the climate background, the site-specific background of understanding of nutrient flux through the system to be able to actually evaluate the effects of conservation practices. We work in the Choptank River watershed, and for those of you not familiar, this is in the DC area, Chesapeake Bay region. Just west of the water body of the Chesapeake Bay is Washington, DC, and up to the north is Baltimore. Pretty large agricultural area, 60% land use, a lot of chickens, some dairy, some horses, a lot of corn and soybeans, and wheat and barley. So we work on farm and with satellite remote sensing to look at winter cover crops grown on farms throughout the landscape. We do this primarily with remote sensing imagery from the SPOT satellite platform. This gives data fairly similar to Landsat, red, green, blue, near-infrared wave bands. And it's a 60 by 60 kilometer footprint, which has kind of defined our study area. And we now have 16 images over 4 years looking at the landscape with which we can look at crop rotation, farming practices, and cover crops. So you can see here in changes in the landscape in the different spot imageries. So here's a close-up, and this has been colored so that near-infrared reflectance is in the red band, so the brighter red fields in this case are vegetated with pretty good green vegetation. Green vegetation tends to reflect brightly in the near-infrared and absorb in the red. The data I'm showing you today uses NDVI, similar to the last speaker was talking about. We get around some of the heterogeneity by actually averaging fields on pretty large scale. But which of these fields are planted to winter cover crops? You might expect some of the darker reds. Those, however, are not necessarily in the cover crop program. There could be winter wheat. There could be pastures. There's some dairy farms in the area. A couple of them outlined in blue with sampling points in them. You see I have good vegetation. Or down the left, some of the cover crop fields are actually not much vegetation on them. So the question is, what type of effect is the actual implementation of the cover crop program having on water quality as measured by nitrogen take-up and measurement of biomass? I won't talk much about the correlation between nitrogen content of the biomass today. So here's a good rylage crop planted after silage harvest. Came on strong in the fall growing season. You want about 400 or 500 growing degrees in the fall to get a good cover crop. Here's a study Ken Staver and Russ Brinsfield did at the Y Research Station with small catchments where you can see groundwater nitrate going down below the crop rooting zone varying prior to cover crop implementation between 86 and 88. Concentrations of nitrogen around 15 milligrams per liter moving up as drought conditions came on, probably because it's dry land corn. You fertilize for expected yield, you get drought, you get excess residual soil nitrogen, and over a few years you see that really bumps up the nitrogen in the groundwater. The problem for Chesapeake Bay is that nitrogen moves through, comes up in streams, and promotes eutrophication in the bay. So the objective of the winter cover crop program is to capture excess residual nitrogen at the end of the summer growing season. You can see after 10 years, they really brought soil nitrogen down through continuous yearly use of cover crops to capture these soil nitrogen pools. That's the ideal situation. What's the real situation? There's a lot of variability, as you might expect, when you're looking at hundreds or thousands of fields across the landscape. So here's cover crop coming on in December. Good establishment if you want to grow wheat. If you grow this out for your yield, it would probably give you a good yield. Not particularly good for water quality in terms of catching nitrogen before the winter leaching season. Here's one planted into soy residue. What you see is a lot of variability. All of these photos, I think, except a couple, tend to be drilled as opposed to broadcast or aerial seeded, but we are looking at all of the farms in the landscape, so we get the whole run. So, nitrogen captured by winter cover crops, and this is being defined as non-leguminous cover crops because that increases nitrogen uptake, can reduce nutrient loss to the Chesapeake Bay, but how much is captured, and how do the various agronomic management practices compare in terms of producing a good winter cover crop? The question can be answered by combining farm program enrollment data with the satellite analysis. We're not really doing anything particularly new and different with the satellite analysis. NDVI has been used to interpret vegetation back since the Landsat first went up. What we are doing is we're linking it to site-specific records through our collaboration with the cost-share programs, so we know the location of all of the fields and the management practices, and then we can use NDVI as a response variable to evaluate all of those treatments. The context, why is this an important question? Well, right now, Chesapeake Bay program is under a lot of pressure to improve water quality, having a lot of difficulty doing it and maintaining that in the face of population growth and animal production. So President Obama had an executive order, you may have heard about this last May, focusing on increased federal integration in Chesapeake Bay protection. Cover crops have been identified as one of the four primary practices, along with nutrient management, IPM, and I shouldn't have set myself up for forgetting the four, but cover crops are looked to control soil nitrogen, and the watershed planners want them to work. The farmers want them to work in with their farming systems, and as you all know, climate variability does not always lead to optimum performance. What's clear is that across the Chesapeake Bay program success needs to be increased if we're going to achieve water quality targets, and it's fairly important. And their adaptive management tools are needed to feed back actual data on performance so we can measure what's going on. That's the context we're working in. You can see here, number of acres enrolled in the Maryland cost share program is pretty significant. They pay about $16 million this year for cover crops, even in the current economic crisis. I shouldn't say crisis, economic situation. So how do we go about the analysis? The first thing we do is we get the agronomic data. We work directly with the soil conservation districts to get the information that the farmers provide to them as part of the enrollment in the program. We know what species was planted, how it was planted, when it was planted, and what the previous crop was. We wish we knew whether it was irrigated or not, because that would probably help us out. But there's a lot of data here for each of the fields. We then digitize these locations in the landscape, and you can see quite a lot of fields in Maryland enrolled in the cover crop program. Then if you start really focusing in on the satellite imagery, how are we processing it? We convert it to a normalized difference vegetation index, and we take an average for the entire field. We overlap that with field sampling data that we collect in the typical manner of going out to the middle of the fields and collecting quadrat data. There's also the opportunity to interact with researchers like yourselves here. If there's imagery for your area and you go out to fields and you make sure to walk far enough apart between sampling points to collect good samples and collect GPS data, this is pretty easy to do. The calibration's a little trickier. We use a log normal conversion to linearize the biomass. Maybe after seeing the last speaker, I'll be trying out Richard's equation. What you see here is a background threshold of about 0.25 where the background soil NDVI interferes with the signal. If your wheat's only in spike stage, Don't expect to be able to measure how much biomass there is from space because it blends in with background of soil and crop and moisture too much. So one of our future research objectives is trying to tighten up that threshold. This is a little bit of data from 4 years. If you look at the previous one, this is a 1 year data showing difference between the two image dates. What we're seeing when we put 4 years together, we're working with 593 samples collected over 4 years. We see significant effects of a predictive model that says biomass is related to NDVI, plus whether we're looking at it in March or December, plus what species it is, and then we're still seeing a residual effect of each individual image. So that gets into some technical remote sensing issues of whether we can tighten up our image processing to get a better direct correlation. But with this, we're getting an R squared of 70. So then we use that correlation to convert from NDVI to estimated biomass. We multiply that by estimated tissue nitrogen content based on our field sampling, and we come up with nitrogen estimates in terms of, well, what we're really estimating is biomass. We're saying, here's your field. It's enrolled in the cover crop program. It was rye planted on September 29th with a drill following corn, and it produced 1,200 kilograms per hectare of rye. You can also sum this up by area, by watershed, by county, and start looking at the agronomic practices. So here you can see I have rye separated by planting date coming out at 1,260 or 888 kilograms per hectare. Reason the earlier planting is a little lower there was a drought that year. If you see wheat significantly less biomass. These, even on similar planting dates, these species do more or less well in terms of putting on winter growth during cool winter conditions. And so can't stress enough that getting good seed soil contact early in the season, maybe after silage harvest, so you get that 300, 400, 500 growing degrees of weather before December, and choosing species that grow well in those conditions is the best way to achieve water quality with cover crop. So we can actually calculate cost per pound of nitrogen paid for by the cover crop program because we also know how much was paid for each of these fields. And there's a sliding schedule based upon the different planting dates and such. What we found is a lot of the fields are not performing as much as we'd like. I'm not showing the data, but we found about 1 metric ton of biomass per hectare was doing a good job of controlling soil nitrogen, and below that, not so good. You see Maryland's doing a great job of getting in early planting, but they're also planting an awful lot of wheat. We found distinctly that wheat is underperforming as a cover crop. So only 28% of the fields met that very successful threshold we'd like to see. Pretty intuitive reasons for good cover crop performance. Might want to mention that cover crops perform well when there's a lot of nitrogen in the soil to begin with. If you're just interested in cover crops for water quality, maybe that doesn't matter. Maybe if the system is nitrogen limited and there's a short cover crop, that's a good outcome. 1/3 of fields really fail to do much for water quality. Okay, we don't want to really be paying for these. What I would like to do is identify them so conservation districts go converse with the farmer, identify goals, and figure out what's going to happen next year in terms of increasing winter performance. There's room for improvement. Important information can be provided through remote sensing and then data aggregation to look at county and regional totals. Send each farmer a performance report saying, here's how your field stacks up in relation to the farms in your area that are growing rye or barley or what have you. I think barley has good potential too. The idea being provide some adaptive feedback directly to the conservation districts and the farmers so that they can get information on their fields, estimate nitrogen contents in their cover crop, and just get this as a benefit of being in the cover crop program. And then we can feed those tools up the chain also to managers so that they can actually be cost-sharing items that are working well for water quality. This is my final slide. I would say one thing we need is breeding cover crops. We haven't really been breeding cover crops nationally, and it would be great to have something that came on as strong as rye in the fall but didn't become a problem as an escape in the springtime if the winter didn't get on, if the farmer didn't get on it early enough. Maybe we should be looking at some non-dwarf varieties of wheat just for cover crop specialties. I don't know, but it would be nice if that research was going on. I'd like to tie it in with whole farm nutrient management too, because the cover crops are just part of the nutrient management system. I think that's it.
I have one question.
Nobody has even one.
Why?
There are too many.
Tell me what a normal last planting date is.
2 weeks before the frost. October 15th in our area would be good. Yeah, but just count up the average growing degree days for your region and make sure you got 300.
All right, thank you.
Thanks, guys.